are the voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those Muslim old boys raised on shotguns. We say praise, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. And if you get over there and just come onto the page, hopefully you take a note at this first link. There's a banner link on underneath the Super Chat banner and the Mad Science Store, which we're working on to get some things together. But there's a banner ad that says Monarch Glass Studio on there. I want you to take a look and go visit these folks if you're interested in glass work. these individuals out there have their own website that, let me get back over there to them. They have classes where they can actually teach groups of people glass blowing and stuff. The reason why I end up getting involved with these individuals is because I got some scientific experiments of my own, and they have to be customized to a certain deal in order to be able to prove theories that I'm talking about in alternative energy. Of course, these folks are also interested in alternative energy and have friends that have other types of custom glass that they make as well. And so with that said, you know, these folks, I'd hope that if you go over there, you're interested in glass or you need some things custom made, that you could support these folks, which would help support us, because materials are the scientific instruments that we're actually going to be testing and designing. These guys over there are going to be helping us make them. And, doggone it, my brain just went to clear the floor. Anyway, go over and check out Monarch Glass Studios. You're probably going to be hearing a lot more about them, because they're going to be building my plasma reactor and possibly some other devices that require glass in the actual building, and so that they will function, you know, with high heat and you know, insulation factors and so on and so forth. So, without getting into all the graphic details of all that, the link's posted over there on the superchat.html. I'm going to post it around a few other places. Also, when I find a company out there that I'm needing their help, and they turn out to be really good-hearted individuals, do a lot of good work for them, I'm working towards... there's a particular piece of equipment that they need to help their business out to make it better. And essentially, this one here is a wet belt sander that they use for smoothing out glass, which also benefit me in the long run, because when I need custom glass made, and I help them, they help me, that kind of thing. That's how we get things done and accomplished out here, especially in the alternative energy community. If somebody got a lathe and you don't, and you got something that they don't, and you kind of share your tools and your knowledge and stuff, and you can actually get things accomplished in the average Joe setting, the we the people kind of setting. Anyway, now that I got that out of the way, like I said, I post a link over there. I'm going to post it also in the Mad Science store as well. It's all about, I need me a webmaster. Somebody can just get out there and build the site as we go. Too many irons in the fire, guys. But nonetheless, we're getting projects done. Got a plasma reactor that should be completed within this week because of this company. And I'll just explain it in the video when I get done, how creative they were in order to make this happen. And you wouldn't believe the skills that these folks that actually do this glass. One of them's name's Tyler over there. And the other one, his assistant, Katie, they work together like a perfect, well-oiled Swiss watch or whatever. I don't know, do you even oil a watch? My brain ain't working this morning. Anyway, I posted a couple links inside the chat room of internal combustion engines. One that has a glass head on there, and Stephen Gibbons posted the one that has the glass cylinder on there. And I wanted to bring that subject up because it's going to also be related to another one that I'm doing as well, that should be done here in the near future. The plasma reactor is the one I'm working on first. That's the first priority in the line, because now I finally actually got somebody who is good with glass, and they know everything that needs to be done in order to seal this thing up. Just stay tuned for the video. You're going to like it. Trust me. Anyway, guys, so anything new on your all's plates? Nothing?
Just trying to heal up my operation, that's all.
Well, we're glad you're still with us. That's a plus.
I am too, Bob.
So
you, hey, he just told me earlier though that something that I found online about blood pressure actually works. So you know, we'll keep an eye on that, of course, and gather more data. But it's something that you know, you find in energy drinks all across the world and all kinds of other stuff like that. Anything that like those energy shots and whatnot, they've got it too. So, and it's just basically a amino acid. So,
tell the name of
it. It's taurine. T-A-U-R-I-N-E.
Cool.
It does work, ladies and gentlemen, because I've had high blood pressure all my life because of my operation and my high blood pressure. They took them 2 or 3 days to get my blood pressure down low enough where they could operate on me. And then once I got out of the hospital, got home, Tom made up a bunch of capsules, that powder, and sent them to me. And I went out to CVS drugstore and bought one of those blood pressure machines. Anyway, yesterday I took check my blood pressure and it was through the cotton pick in the roof. It was over 178 over 108. And I took two of those pills, waited about 20-30 minutes, took my blood pressure again, and it went all the way down to 136 over 89. So they do work. They work great.
Cool.
They're not full fat poison and stuff like that. That's all in heart medicine. So it's an alternative medicine that does work.
Well,
I'm doing a little bit more experimenting with it because I had great results. And the next time on this show, maybe we'll come up and I'll show you some more results on how it works and how to go about it. So Thomas, what size capsules did you use?
Those capsules had 350, approximately 350 milligrams. They were between 348 and 352 when I weighed them out. So just to see how much I was able to stuff in them. And I was using something called a Kaplan Quick. So there's, with the full kit, I didn't just like brush it into the capsules and then cap them off. There's a tamper that I got that pushes the stuff down into the capsule that pushes down in all of it equally. And I used that to pack that stuff in there before I went ahead and started popping them capsule tops on them. So,
ladies and gentlemen, this capsule bloater that he's talking about, you can buy those things on eBay. They're very, very inexpensive for what they are, and very easy to use. I mean, really, truly, an intelligent 8-year-old child could be taught how to use this type of thing. They're really great. They're really great machines. And what we're trying to say is, it's out there. The alternative methods are out there, but you need real people like me. I'm not a scientist, but at the same time, I am a member of the Mad Science Show. And things that can't kill you, I will try.
Hey, Raymond, what you're saying is you're not a certified scientist, you're a practical scientist.
There you go. Thanks, yeah. Clarifying. But you know, what we're here for is try to help people, you know?
Well, that's what is, this... That's
what was that? Was it $30 or $18 for a kilo?
The taurine I found from a seller called Buy From a Trainer on eBay, and it was only $18. And no, I no affiliation with this guy other than I'm a customer, so a satisfied one. I think probably the fastest way you can tell, too, that your taurine is clean and pure is it feels and tastes, if you dump the raw powder in your mouth, like you just dump snow that's not cold in your mouth and it's melting in your mouth. There should be literally no flavor. So,
cool.
That's cool.
Well, yeah. That's basically what we do here, folks. Find alternatives to everything out there. Alternative energy, alternative science. It's all, you know, all out there to benefit the people. This,
Just something else too about that. Taurine is the one of the main reasons they use it in energy drinks is because it literally locks onto and breaks down sugar that's in your bloodstream so that it can be consumed by the cells burned off. So if you're having issues with blood sugar levels being a little too high, it'll help with that too, naturally.
Okay, I need to go back to CVS and get a blood sugar tester.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's do this right. Practice science.
Well, see, I use it when I start getting migraines that, you know, my body is feeling hot, like it's thick, like it's stuffed full of cotton or hot air or something.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't take long before that starts dropping. And, it, you know, like I said, the main contributor that I've narrowed it down to is it's my blood sugar is too high. And as soon as I knock that blood sugar down, suddenly I feel a whole lot better. So,
and
catch it, just start out. Don't let it get out of hand, and it doesn't take much to knock it out.
Taurine knocks your blood sugar down for you, right?
Right.
So it controls your blood pressure and your blood sugar. I mean, duh, and it's an alternative medicine. It's not something that's going to hurt you, you know?
Right, and you're getting an energy boost out of it at the same time, too, because your body's getting to use that energy. It's not flushing it out of your system and throwing it away.
Right.
Cool.
And it, like Suzanne says, that's why we're here, folks, to try to help people. And we've run across something that works, we're going to tell you about it. We're going to tell you exactly how to do it and where to get stuff.
Hey, I got a question for you. Mm-hmm. The other blood pressure medication they were giving you, did it rob you of any energy, or did you have the same amount of energy? Do you get any extra energy when you take it?
No. When I take my blood sugar medicine or blood pressure medicine, that the commercial medicine that they give me, about 10-15 minutes after I take it, I want to go to sleep. I have no energy.
How did you feel after you took this stuff? Did you have less, more, the same?
You hadn't said anything about that to me, or maybe you had, but I had forgotten, so I didn't really pay attention to it, but I do know that I didn't get real sleepy afterwards. I know that.
I did get a little energy.
Yes, I did.
Yep, because you've been sleeping quite a bit because of all the pain you've been in, too. So, I mean, figured that'd be something easy to think back.
You're jogging my memory. You're right. For the past 2 or 3 weeks, I could only be up for 2.5-3 hours, and I'd get so sleepy I'd have to go back to bed. But after taking that yesterday, I was up for like 6 or 8 hours straight, and with no ill effects or no side effects, nothing. Now, there could be, for some people, side effects, but if the side effects would not be severe, I mean,
overdosing, too, because your body actually makes this stuff. The problem is most people don't make enough because they're not getting the right food in their diet. I mean, we eat a lot of processed garbage that they basically either pick it or they kill it before it's ready to be picked or killed. And then they refrigerate it and pump it full of nitrogen or something to make it ripen up to the right color, to get to the right color, cover gas or something like that to similar to nitrogen to keep, like, say, with meat, to do it, keep it from bite things. So it's still been fresh, even though it's been sitting in there for God knows how long.
Well, the chemical that you guys just got through talking about, for the people out there listening in, if you want more information on it, Stephen Gibbons in the chat room posted a link to information about it, so that would be a place to start.
Hey, anyway. If you do Google search, too, for blood pressure and taurine, you'll find there are two main, really decent, they were completely non-biased studies, double-blind placebo on humans, and yet, of course, the rats, you don't have to do double-blind placebo because they don't know what you're doing. But in humans, in all humans, it drops their blood sugar. With rats, just in case you decide to try to use it in the veterinary medicine, the males had a blood sugar or blood pressure drop, but the females actually had a blood pressure rise. So if you want to try to use this with like a cat or a dog or anything else like that, you need to do some investigation and find out. But they do suggest that if you have a pet cat, that if you can get taurine like this and afford it, giving them like, you know, a quarter of a gram or something like that every 2 days is actually a good supplement, because they're red meat eaters, and that's where most of the non-produced taurine from inside the body comes from, is from eating red meat. You get steak?
Actually, I'm a secondhand vegetarian. Cows eat grass, and I eat cows. So maybe I need to on this story a little bit closer. Take a little bit more.
That's when you first started getting it, was they would process it out of the meat and out of the bloodstream and anywhere else that they could find it in red meat, like especially cows, specifically cows. That's part of the reason that taurine was the biggest contributor to energy in Red Bull. And that was where they were originally getting their taurine from whenever they first started making that stuff, was basically a natural, you know, extraction from all the, you know, all the stuff that basically they can't sell. They end up using, turning it into sausage. Well, they will process a bit, that a bit, and they end up getting this sludge that then they can then further process down and find those chemicals. But they have synthetic ways to make that now, so you don't have to have something that comes from an inhumane way if you're one of those people that's worried about killing an animal. So, well, the molecule is not it's indistinguishable between the natural and the synthetically made one. So you're not getting a different chemical. It's the exact same chemical.
Right.
And the synthetic way is, you know, making, I think they use something like the acidic molecule from vinegar and a couple other compounds that they bring together, and it creates it. So just a couple carbon atoms and a salt atom, man. That's pretty much all, almost every amino acid is. Just a couple carbon atoms and a sulfur atom.
Cool.
Good thing.
All right, and so now let's try to jump back over.
You said something and you kind of like skimmed over the top of it. You said you used to put it in Red Bull.
No. They used to use taurine that was processed from bulls, and that's part of where they got the concept to use the Red Bull name. But they get it all from a synthetic source now because it's a lot cheaper.
You know, I like to throw in a little joke here now and then, so it's not really a joke, it's like a cheese stick, you know? Taurine has almost no flavor. Why does Red Bull taste so bad? That's some nasty stuff, man. I took two bottles of one time. I thought, holy cow, I want to go home and brush my teeth. Listerine or something. I mean, man, go, that's some nasty stuff, man.
Alright, so.
That stuff's yellow, too. I think the yellow comes from one of the B vitamins they put in it, too. So, there's a B complex added to that stuff. So
anyway, getting back to the energy portion of this show.
We're still on the energy portion. We're just talking about human energy.
Yeah.
Go on.
Folks, there's a lot of alternative medicines out there, and if we find something that works for us, we'll share it with you. And so, even though we're not doctors or anything like that, so you have to do some research, make sure you check and make sure everything's fine with you before you try anything. But
oh yeah, yeah, don't do any of this without the advice of a physician. We're none of us are card carrying members of the practitioners of medicine. Yeah. We're not a licensed practice on you, so we could get in trouble for practicing.
Yeah,
you gotta get a practice on people first.
Besides, it's not a medicine. It is, taurine is a natural substance that does natural things. That's all it is to it. It's just natural herbs.
Hey, you want to know something else kind of peculiar about this whole thing? Because your body burns through chemical process sugar, and it uses amino acids to do a lot of this stuff. You know, what's funny is it's just carbon and sulfur that makes that, and our first clear conductive plastics are made out of a polycarbonated, molecule that has sulfur in it, what they call a PDOT. It's polyethylene, and it has it's wrapped in a ring with a sulfur atom in it, and it makes it conductive.
Thomas is not suggesting you go out there and cook up a bunch of plastic and eat it either.
Yeah. Well, pollination makes it a little hard to digest, man. Right. You know, the ends for your digestive enzymes and whatnot to get in there and bust it down are wrapped up so that you can't get to it. But I'm just saying, the electrical properties is because of the sulfur, and I'm thinking that, it's the reason why aminos work so well is because there's an assisting of electronic transfer to bust that molecule down, man, and use it.
All right.
We are beings, man. Electric beings. Why do you think you feel so good? Been near your plasma reactor there, or your Tesla coil there, she says.
Speaking of the plasma reactor.
Yeah. Did you see what I did there?
Monarch Glass is the ones that's actually manufacturing the chamber for my plasma reactor. Like I said, I posted a link over there to their website, and go over and look at them, check them out, and if you happen to need any artistic glass made or custom glass, give these folks a call and help support their business, because when you're supporting them, you're actually supporting us, because we're going to actually be able to get some things done. We want to keep these folks in the business, because they got talent, they're nice individuals, and we'd like to see them succeed. When businesses, small businesses like that thrive with talents and skills and knowledge and tool sets to do things, customize things like that, it's a benefit for all of us. So they're actually building my plasma reactor for me. So I'll have a working model here pretty soon that I can get a video out to share everybody to show them what it was that I was talking about all along. But not only that, while I was down there watching them in the process of manufacturing one, a test glass to show me what it was, they did such a good job on the test glass that I also told them to add that one to my bill as well, because that test glass, I already found another use for it, which basically I'll share that in a future video as well. But you got to support these small companies like that if you're going to support the people out there, especially, you know, if you're going to be...
That's what I was going to say, man. You're talking about glass blowers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you live all the way on the other side of the world, just go look up a local glass blower. Don't go without, you know. That's the secret, man. Let's find, like you said before, building a dream team. Well, your local glass blower could become part of your dream team there, you know.
That's right, and these folks are also interested in interested in alternative energy. Stephen Gibbons posted in there, artistic glass, not to be mistaken with autistic glass. Is that what he just said?
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. Anyway. I thought he was getting ready to say something like, for scientific glass, which it's all scientific. If you look at how the process, the way that they actually blow this glass, I mean, it was amazing to sit around and watch them at work and how they were able to shape this thing the way that they wanted it to shape and do what they did. And so, you know, with that said, we came up with a creative idea on how to get all the metal parts into the glass while the glass is being set up as well. So I'll explain all that to you, in the video on how they actually...
Hey, Shazitz.
Yeah.
If they can work with that, the fused quartz glass, then we need to look at talking to them about building the whole lab set up.
Well, I was getting ready to go into that portion next, because, ironically enough, he's got another friend with the same first name as him that he works with the different types of fused quartz glass and glass like that for making lamps. He's more of a lamp maker, and they can make things out of, I can't remember what the type of glass it was. He explained it to me, but...
It's not fused quartz.
The guy has access to everybody in the business that knows about all kinds of glass.
Right. Well, let's see, the three big ones for lab equipment is borosilicate.
That's one of them right there, borosilicate. That's the one I was trying to remember.
The brand name is Pyrex.
Yeah.
And it's like, fused quartz glass is king, Pyrex is queen. You know, it's the second two. The best that you can get for that when it comes to power, the ability to withstand heat.
Well,
so, but the properties that make it actually better when it comes to shock and physical shock over the quartz, it can handle being abused and dropped and banged around a lot more than the fused quartz can.
Yeah, I honestly believe that the type of glass that Tyler was putting together, him and Katie down there at the Monarch Glass. I honestly believe that the way that they made that and the actual glass itself is going to be fine for this first prototype to prove the theory of what I'm talking about. And so with that said, if it gets to the point where we ramp this thing up to a lot more power, then we can also have the option of help getting his friend to help make the make one that would withstand a whole lot more heat. And so with that said, I want to keep Tyler in the mix because he's, like I said, he's not just an artist, but they're really nice folks to work with. And there's so many different projects that would require his skill set. So as far as on the Dream Team, you know, you couldn't have a better team on the Dream Team than those folks down there at Monarch Glass. I mean, they're awesome folks. And so, you know, with that said, I'd hope you go over there if you get an opportunity to jump over to superchat.html. That's the only link I've got right now. It's up there to their webpage, but you can also look it up on online, Monarch Glass Studios. If you don't want to jump over to the chat room, just jump over there to Monarch Glass Studios and go look at some of the artwork that they've done and some of the deals that they have on their website about installing glass or whatever. And I'm going to work on trying to get them a commercial wet belt sander. And when I get that accomplished, that'll help benefit their business, which in turn will help benefit our research, because they'll have tools to do things a lot better, you know. And it doesn't matter to me what type of skill set somebody's got out there. If there's a method by which I can help any of them get any tools that they need whatsoever, I'm going to work on it. I have no problem asking, you know, for people to support other people. You know, I'm kind of apprehensive about people supporting me personally. But I'm getting around it slowly but surely. Because I want to see this thing get done. I want to see some advancements in technology, and I would like to see some... I just want to move forward. We need a success. And so with that said, I got the plasma reactor should be done within this week that I can start testing and doing videos with. And the next one in line from that is we're actually going to modify a four-stroke internal combustion engine to do run off of air pressure or steam. And that's going to be another stepping stone. And then the next project in line from that is we're actually going to build an internal combustion engine that runs completely different than the modern style version, and will literally run off of virtually any type of fuel out there. And so with that said, there's three projects that should be able to be done in a reasonable amount of time and actually show some progress. So,
you know, I just about did what you said, Shadiz. I just went to Google and typed in Monarch Glass, and it came up Studios.
Yeah.
And I went to the website. Holy cow, these people actually give classes on this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they're amazing. So, people out there, you need to check these people out. They're dynamite. They really are.
Yeah, and if you ever get if you ever get the opportunity to watch them in action, you're going to be amazed. I mean, I love watching people with the craftsmanship, but the way that they do this, it's just, you couldn't ask for better teamwork. As far, of course, you know, they're messing with hot glass, and so they got to have safety in there, and so, you know, you just have to watch them. It's like watching a precision machine. They're that good. And for I can't wait. I honestly can't wait to share the video once this is all put together to show you what they did. And I will be talking, you know, about them in the videos whenever I do that, to let everybody know that these are the folks that was able to build this thing. And this has been one of the hard parts of trying to get this plasma reactor done, is to try to find somebody who had the skill sets and could understand what it is that I'm asking of them to be able to try to create something. And it took a team effort, too. You know, it was my friend Larry that was with me that pointed out on how we could actually get this done, when we actually thought there might be a possibility that they might not be able to do it because of the process that they had to do it. But we actually found a workaround. We troubleshooted this idea and found a workaround that would be help us both out. And so with that said, that's what we do here on the Mad Science Show. We talk about all different types of machinery and ideas and concepts and anomalies that we've seen in videos and stuff, materials. I'm telling you, folks, the dream team, if we get the right people in the right room at the right time with the right equipment, there ain't no ifs, ands, or buts. We could literally build perfect working systems that would benefit the world. You know, there's methods to pull water out of the air. There's methods to, you know, do so much, so better and so much more efficient than what's been done so far. And the key to free energy out there is not terminology like over unity or zero point or whatever. It's all about, we're surrounded by energy right now. We've got tons of equipment that there's really nothing wrong with the internal combustion engine, with the exception is the way that you're running it. The fuel, the way that you're putting the fuel in, the way that you're making use of wasted energy and such. That's what these projects are all about. If we can modify internal combustion engines to run directly off of water, you know, hydrogen and oxygen, if you think about the basic science of it, you know, one's an implosive gas and the other one is an explosive. They'll burn. You know, and it's ironic that you put fires out with water, but yet water in its separate elements is a fuel. And that's why they tell you in the fire department industry, fireman industry, is not to throw water on electrical fire. It isn't going to, because you're going to get the crud shocked out of you. It's because you can cause a hydrogen explosion. And you never throw water on electrical fire. These are things that you can learn in basic science. That's what Mad Science talks about, you know. And I like what you said earlier there, Thomas, about practical science. That's what we do, practical science. We actually test what we're doing. We share our results. And from that, we make advancements. We find out better ways to use stuff and better ways to do stuff. So you guys got any thoughts on that? Man, you could hear the crickets rolling.
We just thought we'd throw you under the bus.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Because your mouth's so good, you know.
Anyway, there's the videos that I posted in there. One of them has a little gasoline Briggs & Stratton engine that has a glass head on the top of it. And there's another version out there with a plexiglass head on the top of it. And so, when a lot of people are looking at this, if you tell the average Joe that you're going to put a glass head on a an internal combustion engine, the very first thing they think about is breaking glass. You know, oh no, that ain't going to hold up because it's going to break. You can sit there and watch this action going on inside there, inside the combustion chamber. You can watch the spark, you can watch the valves opening and closing, you can see the actual explosion itself of the gas, watch the piston going down and up, and from just observing what you're seeing right there, you can learn a lot on how fuel is actually burnt inside there. How you know, better ways to design it in order to get a better, more efficient burn out of the deal. One of the examples of that was alcohol. He was running alcohol in the same deal, and you could see when the alcohol was running that it was more like a liquid inside there, and it was burning very little of that alcohol in order to push that piston down. It actually cleaned the cylinders out while he was running the alcohol. Cleaned them up nice and shiny. And
you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but the first internal combustion engine that burns gasoline today were actually designed to burn alcohol. And actually, it was Henry Ford that went down to South America and bought a 20,000-acre sugar plantation and sent all the equipment to produce the sugar and then turn the sugar into alcohol. And then Second World War started, and they found out that they could use gasoline, which was a byproduct that had absolutely no practical use. They found out it would burn in these alcohol engines, and they were throwing this stuff away. Well, in the Second World War, they needed a lot of fuel, so they switched over and started using gasoline and quit using alcohol altogether. So the Henry Ford plantation is still sitting down there in Brazil right now with all the equipment rusting away.
Wow, that's a shame.
Trivia in history, a lot of people don't realize.
That's a shame. I'd like to see some of that old equipment.
Yep.
But,
I've seen pictures of it. It's amazing. I mean, some of this stuff is huge. It's as big as a two-story building.
The reason why I keep talking about this glass head on there is not only just for the scientific observation point of the deal, is how you can actually watch how the different fuels react in there and how volatile some are. Like even... Y'all need to mute your mic or something.
Chair, sorry about that.
So you can actually watch it. He runs acetylene in there, which was a more volatile fuel and actually started to crack the deal on there. But even that acetylene gas, if you backed it off a bit, you wouldn't need nearly as much fuel to use this. And the whole key about learning what types of fuels are running better inside there is to be able to get the best efficiency out of an already existing piece of equipment. That's the key. There's also a video posted over there where Stephen Gibbons posted it in the chat room that has a glass cylinder on there. And you can watch a side view of the combustion going on. So these are kind of tools like that that not only allow you to see what's going on inside there, but also prove concepts of different things like glass, insulation factor of glass and such that, heck, you could build an entire engine out of glass. And you can get the fuel input down to the point where that combustion, there's so much fuel wasted in the combustion cycle and exhaust cycle of the internal combustion engine that if you could get that down to only putting the exact amount that it takes. I know there's some math wizards out there that could tell you the exact amount that you could put in there, the very least that you could put in there to cause that piston to be shoved down inside there. And so you could get it to the point where you hardly use any fuel. If you think about the power of hydrogen and oxygen, I did a video called The Hydrogen Danger where we exploded a balloon full of hydrogen, and we didn't even fill it up very much. We just probably about the size of a softball. But when that thing went off, man, you can't hear it on the camera because the acoustic wave was so loud that it made it sound like a pew on the camera. When in reality, out there in the open air, it sounded like a couple shotguns going off. It was that loud. That's a lot of power. And that was just out in a balloon. And so it don't take very much hydrogen to actually create the force necessary to push that piston down. Well, what we're also learning about, you know, being able to use that glass like that is that there are certain materials that will hold up to a lot of heat. There's a video also posted over there in the awake side of the chat room where it has a race car that's made with a certain type of plastic, and the engine itself is made with a certain type of plastic. And so now you're talking about an engine that weighs a whole lot less than the normal either aluminum blocks or steel blocks that they make engines out of. And so obviously if you can cut down the weight of an engine in an automobile. If you can cut down the weight, then you're going to save fuel. If you can cut down how much fuel necessary to run it, you can save fuel. If you can get this thing to run off of water, for example, then you're no longer throwing carbon into the mix when you're burning this this fuel. And so your exhaust is cleaner. There's so many different pluses of this technology that if combined together and properly engineered, you could make the perfect internal combustion engine. And if you can make the perfect internal combustion engine, you can take the next step towards turning that engine into a generator that will turn an electric generator head that will be super fuel efficient and produce electricity. You'd be able to run this thing all day long, every day, without having to worry about the dang thing falling apart or running out of gas. From that point on, the plasma reactor technology that I'm working on will show you how to take that energy away from that generator head without invoking Lenz's law, so that you can move that energy to where you need it and then turn it right back into usable energy again. So basically you're building a break or a bridge in between there where it's not directly coupled to the machine. That's not causing the engine to have to bog down every time you turn a light bulb on. And so if this was done in this order right here, you had the perfect running internal combustion engine, you had the best built stator motor style permanent magnet generator, you take the energy off of that permanent stator style magnet generator head, move it into a different state of matter, different form of energy, and then dump that energy down into your storage banks, and from that point on run your inverters, which would run your electricity. That's the first stop, but that's the first step towards energy independence for the world, as far as I'm concerned. This doesn't even scratch the surface of what we could do. This is what is within our grasp. This is what we can prove already. Now, as far as the more exotic style alternative energy and renewable energy sources out there, we can troubleshoot those on the way through, and we can finally bring those to the forefront. But for what we have to work with, what the average Joe has to work with, just about anybody and his brother can find an old five-horse Briggs and Stratton laying around somewhere. They made lots of them. And if you can't find a Briggs and Stratton, I'm sure there's a lot of different other brands out there that you could find that you could use these techniques to modify them. And if you build you a home generator, worst-case scenario, you got this thing all set up and the power grid goes down, you got some backup power, worst-case scenario. But you're doing it in a more efficient, more clean manner. So what do you guys think? Got any thoughts on that? Anybody? Man. Got your mics muted. Got crickets going. Hello? Guess I'm by myself today.
We're leaving you in the bus, man.
All right. So, I got my project started. Want to hear about any other projects anybody else has got started? This is what I'm working on. I'm working on the plasma reactor that I got Monarch Glass building the housing for me. And I'm working on modifying a four-stroke gasoline engine to show what it can do. And then we're actually going to build an entire internal combustion engine from basically scrap. Going to turn that new motor into possibly, potentially, the motor of the future as far as internal combustion engines go. Now, there are all kinds of possibilities when you're talking about building an engine. We talked about on Brain Food yesterday, we had actually talked about pneumatic motors. some of these pneumatic drills and grinders that they got out there in the auto industry have some serious RPMs on them and some serious potential. There's actually a air car that a few people built out there that if that was done right, throwing all these things in conjunction with each other, you could build an internal combustion engine that its main purpose was to produce air pressure. And if this internal combustion was running on water and then turning a pump that was actually putting air into a pneumatic engine, it's unlimited which directions you'd want to go with this. You know, one of these by themselves may not seem like that big of a deal, but add all these in conjunction with each other and the proper materials to be the best. If you want the heat to stay in, you got the best insulators or whatever. If you want the heat to stay out, vice versa. You guide that energy where you want it to go. You send the heat where you want it to go, and you use all of it. There is no, in this version of a motor, there is no such thing as wasted energy. Period. That's what we're talking about. So, Jermaine, you still there? Hello? Doggone it, anybody there? I'm like, man.
He said he had to go. He said he had to go do something. He left the BRD in there. He never said never tagged us with a back, so maybe he's not back yet.
Okay.
You didn't look.
So you guys got any thoughts on the matter at all?
No.
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 All right.
No.
That's it. They ain't got no thoughts.
I'm glad you found somebody that can work with the glass like they need to, and on the manufacturing side, I can see some benefits to maybe finding a way to rig that belt sander you're talking about up to a lathe, and you chuck the glass up in the lathe, and then you can turn down the outside of the glass in a circular fashion with some, you know, accuracy, so you can get joints that when we press them together, all you need is just a little bit of liquid in between there, and because it presses most of the liquid out, you're not going to get any gas or anything passing back and forth between those two joints.
Well, any ideas for innovations that could benefit this company and help them to thrive would benefit the world, because these small companies out there and people that have the talents like this, if you could only sit there for a while and watch how they did the work that they did, not only is it impressive, I mean, it's artistic, it's scientific, and to do something like what you're talking about, that would open up even more gates for the, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff that they made down there. It was incredible.
What? I've ground circular cuts into a tungsten carbide using something that's basically like a Dremel. It's called a Fordham.
Yeah.
It's a size one. It's actually, the Fordham is, you know, where the Dremel came from. The whole rotary tool that you see that people call a Dremel now. Before the Dremel came out with their cheapo version for the home use, the Fordham was what was being, it was the big brother of that. The forefather of it, that they use in like gun shops and jewelry shops and all kinds of places like that. You have it hanging on a hook, and then the handle is actually just an extension through a wire that spins the chuck around. And so I you know, because it's it's more uniform and I guess prehistoric, being that, you know, it's not all ergonomically shaped, it's actually just a cylinder that you hold onto like a pencil. It just made it a lot easier for me to mount those on the bed of a lathe, and then I could turn the lathe on and move that head while it's spinning around at high speed back and forth against whatever part I was working on, so it would slowly grind away that material as it spun around in a circle to get a perfectly circular grind. And I was using diamond bits that literally just came from Harbor Freight to grind down into carbide. And you can take a piece of tungsten carbide and press it against a piece of quartz, and it will cut right into that piece of quartz like nobody's business.
Cool.
So if the diamond will work on that, I guarantee you the diamond would work on that, the glass that they're working on. I think the belt thing, probably the big main factor for the belt for them, between the liquid and the water and the it being a belt, is so that they can put flat ground edges on, like they can just rest the whole thing down on there, and you've got a perfectly flat surface that when you rest it on a flat table, it, all the edges around the shape, whatever it is that you just ground, will set flush on the table. So, but to give them the ability to basically, turn out, say, like I said, the joint, the glass ground joints that you find in some fairly expensive glassware for lab equipment. I mean, you can get it cheap if you're willing to wait and take a chance with it being broken from China. But if we could get it at a decent price from somebody here locally, the buck stops here, man. You know what I mean?
Well, and that's another plus about what they did for me down there was that they gave me an awesome price on building the first prototype on that deal. Whereas other companies wanted thousands of bucks, they made it where it was within my reach. And so that means that I'm going to be able to deliver to the people out there a working prototype that they can take measurements on. And if they want a copy of what it is that I'm building, then we'd be able to manufacture them reasonably enough to literally allow everybody to, have one of these deals. It's within everybody's grasp. And that's the key, and that's why I say we need to support these individuals that have these talents and skills, and if they need other tools, and we got the means to get them other tools, then, I want to help. There's, if somebody's out there doing 3D printing and stuff like you, Thomas, and the CNC mill thing, if there's a way that we can help, to make it easier for you to do a certain job or whatever, that's what the Dream Team's all about. I got a toolbox, you got a toolbox, he's got a toolbox, we all got knowledge in different subjects, come together, we build these things, and that's the way it's going. You see what I mean? We get things done.
Yep. Well, I was talking about using micro piezo, quartz crystal piezo generators that are chemically grown through electrolysis, and I can see some benefit to some of the parts that I would need to build anything that would basically mass produce something like that by contacting somebody like them. So
I'm gonna add Justin in here. Keeps trying to
He's
call.
In there. Oh, Jermaine's in. Sorry.
Jermaine's
in.
All right, so...
Them people with the first letter J in their name all sound the same to me.
All right, so... basically... Doggone it.
Do I need to adjust them?
Yeah, go ahead and do that if you would. All right, so anyway...
This is not online.
We've got a couple projects going on. There's three projects that I'm doing on my own right here, and we'll be able to get some videos out for everybody to see what's going on. There's people out there in this world that are worried about the environment. I'm worried about the environment to the extent that I don't like seeing anybody polluting streams and trash in the neighborhood, and there ain't no reason to drive down a road and throw your garbage out the window and that kind of stuff, or just deliberately dumping toxic materials down in waterways and such like that. If you take care of nature, nature will take care of you. It's as simple as that. But the point I'm trying to get to is that the world said that there was a need for clean, renewable, alternative energy, and I'm sitting here telling the world that we actually have every single piece of the puzzle necessary to make this a reality. And it's not going to be any government out there, it's not going to be any corporation that's going to bring this to your household, it's going to be us. And what you're seeing right here is just a tiny fraction of an example of what could be done if you work together. So if I can get the belt sander for Monarch Glass, that's going to make them happy because they're going to be able to do a whole lot more, quality work, make it more efficient for them to do certain things. And Thomas needs something for his deal or whatever. Anybody out there who's manufacturing, and Jermaine, who's really good with his hands with metals, you should see some of the work this kid's done. So it's amazing. But bring all these folks to the table, help them to succeed in their businesses. You know, if they're prospering in their business life and there's a part you need made or whatever, and you've already helped them out in the past and you've already seen the quality of their work, man, you ain't got nothing but things to gain out of that deal. Right now, I got so many different ideas that I want to pay this man to work some glass for me for projects that if I would have had the access to his skill set and his tools and his team a long time ago, I could have got some things done a whole lot faster. But it's not as easy to find some of these individuals out there as you'd think it is. You know, the access to the World Wide Web sure has been a benefit, because that's basically how I ended up finding them. But it was a search to find somebody who could literally do something that, for the most part, unless you've got thousands and thousands of dollars worth of industrial equipment and the knowledge how to use it and the mathematics on how to put everything together and the computer programs and all that, then you, the average Joe's, got your work cut out for you getting anything done, and you end up having to make it out of junk or recycled. And while it will prove the common concept, it won't get a good, good working prototype out there without the flaws, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. So, what do you guys think?
But that's what the proof of concept is for.
Yeah.
Just to show that it works. But say that you can make it better when you get your resources and when you get the stuff you need.
Well, that's why I made everything all this time out of junk and recycled stuff, was because if I could make it out of junk, imagine what you could do putting a dream team together and getting those folks out there with the talents. Man, if something's properly engineered, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just need how to redesign it to where it works better than it did. There ain't no reason why you couldn't literally build a tire that would function just like the average tire out there, that you'd never have to worry about it going flat. There's actually tires out there that they call run flat tires that you can run over nails and the tire will stay up, and you can keep on driving until you get somewhere to pull the nail out. So it's not like it can't be done. But to get the when I talk about free energy, I'm not talking about zero point. I'm not talking about over unity. I'm not even talking about trying to get out more than I put in. All I'm talking about is taking the existing equipment, or even new equipment for that matter, and being able to use that energy to its maximum efficiency, which means you don't have to use as much energy input to get what it is that you need on the other side. Ain't no reason why you need to spend 120 volts worth of electricity per hour to run a digital alarm clock that only requires 9 volts AC or 9 volts DC, no matter how you look at it. Either way, you're talking 9 volts as opposed to 120 volts to run it. So there's a lot of the equipment that we use out here on a daily basis that are energy hogs that just flat out waste energy. And resistive loads like your hot water heater and your electric stoves and stuff like that, if there's a better way to do it that is more efficient, that uses less energy, and that cuts down on how much you have to spend for your energy cost out there in the world, that means a few extra pennies in your bucket that you can use to put some extra bread on the table. Am I wrong, guys?
Nope.
Well, that's the whole purpose of this deal.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely 100% correct. After all, isn't it the engineers that everything that's ever been built to produce some sort of energy uses energy, but then they come with that coefficient of efficiency. In other words, you put in so much energy and you get so much out. Now, something that's 30-40% efficient means it is 60-70% inefficient. So consequently, that means there is room for improvement.
Exactly. If you take a one that's only got 40% efficiency and bring it up an extra 10%, that's a plus in my book. But if you can bring it up to 100% efficiency, where you're not wasting any energy and you're guiding the energy where you want it to go, you know, they wind copper wire around cores for a reason. It's because they basically steer that energy where they want it to go. And by doing that, you can get an electric motor to turn. You know, you're doubling up every time you bring one of those turns around that core. You strengthen that magnetic field that you need to use to get the work done to turn that motor. And so with that said, all you've done is basically use the copper wire like railroad tracks. You guided that energy where you wanted it to be. There ain't no difference between where you're guiding electricity, where you're guiding the magnetic field, or where you're guiding the fuel inside of an engine or a stove. And then if you know, there's there's technologies out there, the forward-looking infrared heat deals where you can actually aim it at your house and it'll show you where your house is losing heat energy. The brightest spots will there be the hottest spots, and you'll see where the different colors are, and that's where you can tell the difference in the insulation. If it's 70 degrees inside your house and you can see 70 degree marks up underneath the door, then you know that at least 70 degrees of that temperature is coming out that door, the crack under the door. And so you throw an old towel up over there to block it in. Or you redesign the bottom of that door to have a flexible deal that locks in every time and seals it up. You know, we could build perfectly engineered houses that would be so super inefficient, it'd be like a thermos. You know, a cave will stay anywhere from 60 degrees all year round. No matter what temperature it is outside, it's 60 degrees inside because it's got all that earth insulation around it. And if it wasn't for that big gaping hole in the cave, then it'd probably be warmer in there. So,
there is a house, and it's built inside of a big glass house, like where they grow plants and stuff.
Yeah, like a greenhouse.
Yeah, a big greenhouse, but with a normal house inside. Yeah, and it keeps the warmth inside.
Yeah, it'd be working like a thermos, man. It's amazing how, like, something as simple as a thermos could literally teach you how to build your house like a thermos or an igloo cooler. Man, it's like middle of 4th of July, you got your ice and your soda pop up inside the doggone cooler, and it stays cold inside there. The ice doesn't all melt away. It takes a while before, you know, that heat can actually make it through there. And if it wasn't for opening and closing the lid to get your soda pop out, it'd probably stay frozen a lot longer. But nonetheless, that information right there tell you. Huh?
You guys talk, Thomas and I have already talked about that with a 3D printer. Building a chamber to actually print out hollow plastic bricks. There are many, many different types of plastic that are extremely poor conductors of heat and cold.
Yeah.
So we use type of plastic to print out hollow plastic bricks filled with argon gas, because argon gas is a very good insulator. And if they're filled with argon gas and you build your house out of that, then you would have a thermos. Your house would be the thermos. Whatever temperature you had in the house, that's what it would be for the next 4 or 5 days. So you could literally heat your house with 4 or 5 birthday candles.
Well, you know what I'd like to do, if I could get the financial backing to literally to do it, I would like to build the perfect house. You know, I still want to work on the dome that I've been talking about building. I want to do that, but when I do it, I want to do it in such a manner that it is so incredibly efficient that you can literally run the entire thing as far as all your energy uses inside on something as small as a single 12-volt car battery. Well, you wouldn't need any more energy than that. If you think about what I'm talking about, it sounds crazy that you could run an entire house off of a car battery. Go out there and actually do the mathematics on all the losses of everything that you use in your house, even the little plug-ins that you use to charge your cell phone up. You know, and all the different ways, those things are still using energy even though you ain't using it to charge your phone, because it's still sending the energy through the doggone transformers inside of it when it's not, as long as it's plugged in, it's using energy, period. And so with that said,
electrical vampires.
Yeah, I did a video called The Redneck Hot Tub, and it's probably one of the most important videos that I've done, even though the subject itself is kind of, you know, like a little humorous, redneck hot tub. But what it proves, I was literally sitting in that hot tub. There was snow on the ground, there was snowing outside, and I was in my shorts in that hot tub in the dead of winter, and the only thing that was keeping that water warm was a doggone coffee pot element. That's it. So for the price of running a coffee pot, I was able to sit out in the doggone weather outside. Now think about this for a second. Not only am I absorbing the heat, but the heat is being dispersed up into the air above it. It's out in the open. The wind blowing across the water or whatever. Underneath the tub itself, not even insulated. So that's a lot of that's a lot of heat that if I would have took and closed that into a closed-in tent or whatever to keep that heat down inside there, it would have got so hot I'd have had to get up out of there. I'd have boiled myself like a frog.
The frog started to boil, which it is.
Yeah.
Perfectly, you would have to put a thermostat on the heating element itself. Otherwise, the water would be so hot, you couldn't use it for anything.
That's right. But the point is, I use so little energy to do it.
I know. That's the whole thing. A lot of people listening to you, they don't understand how much waste there was. The whole pot was open. The bottom wasn't even insulated. Yet it was still warm enough for you to get in the wintertime with snow on the ground.
Yep.
Come on, folks. I mean, if you'd insulated it, you would have had to put a thermostat on it.
So I delivered
a third of the energy that you actually used.
I delivered that bit of knowledge out to the world with a little bit of humor, you know. I basically built a redneck hot tub. You know, it sounds funny. But in reality, if you want to look at the science of it, it's brilliance. Because now they just learned something that they probably hadn't even considered at all. Now, right now, if you got a hot water heater going, chances are it's got a little 1500 watt or above heating element in there. That is a serious resistive load that will come on whenever the temperature of that water starts to drop down below normal operating temperature. So it'll kick on, run your electricity, even when you're not taking a shower, it'll kick on. And when it sets there for a while and the water cools down, then it'll kick on again. And so it's constantly all day long draining energy. So if you're going to be draining energy anyway, then why not take one of these coffee pot elements and hook it to your hot water heater, circulate the water through there so that you're using less wattage per hour, and you're keeping this thing maintained to 160, 180 degrees, whatever temperature you want it at.
Here's the thing now, what about if you're using electric, so there's no open flame or spark,
How about wrapping another 6 inches of insulation around your hot water heater and capping it with some really lightweight aluminum or whatever? Now you've actually increased the insulation factor, which means that if you're not using the hot water, it's not going to cool down as fast. Your heating element's not going to come on as often. It's all about insulation.
Well, you could also...
That you're expending.
You could also do it like this, too. If, for being out in the open, it took 4 to 6 hours for you to... When you first turned the thing on, when you first put fresh cold water in it, when you first turn it on, it took about 4 to 6 hours before it gets up to operating temperature where the water's warm. So, if you weren't going to take a shower till 10 or 8 or 10 o'clock at night, you know, later on, you could shut your hot water heater off, have it on a timer to where it would kick on whatever time necessary to take to get that water up to operating temperature, and so the rest of the day, the doggone thing ain't running. If you're not using it anyway, then it ain't running. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
You just saved a whole lot of fuel. You save a whole lot of energy. Matter of fact, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm going to go out and get me some timers, and I'm going to set my doggone hot water heaters to literally shut themselves off when everybody's at work and turn itself on 4 hours prior to them coming home. Or two, if it only takes 2 hours to get it hot. Depending on the size of element that's inside there, it may not even take but an hour to get it hot. So if you turn it on an hour before you come home, then all the rest of the time you wasn't wasting energy. What do you think?
I think you're right.
Start cutting the light bill down. And if in reality, if you did the same thing to your freezer, if your freezer's already frozen, takes a while before it'll thaw out, even when the power goes down. And so if you had your freezer on a timer, that you sit there and watch how long it actually takes you to thaw out your freezer to where it gets down to where it start, you know, running your food inside there if you didn't get it cold again, and how long it actually takes to heat back or cool back down when you plug it in, you could set your doggone freezer to do the same exact thing. It would ride the ice for a while, and then when the ice started getting down there, you could have it automatically kick itself back on, kick the compressor on, and do the work. I mean, that's kind of what the thermostat does. But not all of them are that efficient. You know what I mean?
You do.
So, insulate the heck out of that freezer to where it would hold that cold in there longer. That'd be less time that air compressor would kick on. And then that, take a factor in the fact that the air compressor itself is going to put heat off, like the back of your refrigerator. It's adding heat to your room. And so during the winter time, your refrigerator, if it's cold in your house, your refrigerator ain't going to kick on. Matter of fact, during the winter time, just shove the doggone thing outside.
Yeah, but she says, with my old furnaces, old ovens, they used to have a soapstone countertop, and it would hold the heat for a long time. So when there wasn't any fire or it burned out, the stones were still warm, hot, for a long period of time.
That's brilliant. I actually put inside of my wood burners, I put about a half inch steel plate in the bottom of my wood burners. And so whenever you're sitting there running the stove, it's heating up that steel plate. And then even after the wood burns out, you still got some heat left over because those steel plates are still hot. And they're sitting underneath the wood ash. And so it's insulated and it holds that heat in longer.
I was going to say, you're talking about efficiency. I'm surprised that nobody has basically thought about taking the dryer vent that comes off your dryer and circulating that hot air into a water heater.
See, that's a good point there, too. Heck, if you're going to be exhausting that heat anyway, put it right down into the vent for the hot water heater and get it to add, transfer that heat over to your water.
Right.
See, it's brilliant. And the internal combustion engine, if there ever was a case to be made for over unity, the internal combustion engine would be the one. Because, like I said a million times, if you took one thing away from that internal combustion engine, it would literally destroy itself. Because it's it's getting too hot. And heat, in most cases, are your worst enemy for electronics or any gadget for that matter. It starts to break down the oil, which produces more friction, and starts tearing parts apart. But if you had that thing so super efficient to where the engine itself isn't getting hot, you focus that heat in where you want it, and then you take any exhaust heat off of that and utilize it for thermoelectrics or just any kind of heat transfer system that's going to give you hot or cold or whatever, man, you already got it right there in front of your face. The gasoline engine out there, your car itself is a power plant in itself. And the only reason why you don't sit there and allow an internal combustion, a regular gasoline motor to idle very long, because it's not designed to sit there at idle speed all the time. It's not oiling itself as much as it should. Like a diesel engine, you can run a diesel engine 24 hours a day. Matter of fact, there are some companies out there that, because of the weather or whatever reason, they never shut them diesels off. They leave them running because diesel fuel has oil built into it. It's not going to tear the cylinders up like it would in a gasoline engine from getting too hot from sitting there idling too long. But you redesigned that system to where whenever it was idling, that it would get lubricated like it should, you wouldn't have that issue. And you could sit there and run that thing as long as you got fuel in the tank. Well, using things we already know about hydrogen technology and steam engines and stuff that's not new, you can make that engine so much more efficient that you could afford to run it all day long and not have to worry about run out of fuel. So, as far as proving free energy, it's there. It's just a matter we don't have an energy crisis. We got a common sense and an efficiency crisis.
Amen.
We waste too much. Get that waste down. Use it.
Everything can be measured in foot pounds, kilowatts, newtons, BTUs, and there's all everything. No matter how you measure anything, there are conversion formulas. Okay? So if you take the actual energy needed to propel the average modern day automobile, 8-cylinder or 6-cylinder, at 55 miles per hour, if you did all the conversion factors, the actual BTUs of energy in 1 gallon of gasoline is capable of propelling that automobile at 55 miles an hour for 360 miles. The only reason that it does not is because of the efficiency factor of the internal combustion engine.
Yep. So
therefore, there is tremendous amounts of improvement that can be made.
If you take some of the same, if you could build two cars, both of them the same aerodynamic, one of them made out of steel, one of them made out of carbon fiber and plastics, and you could do this, drive the same car with the same size engine down the road, and guaranteed the one that's lighter is going to use less fuel. And
not
so.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, you're not accounting for wind turbulence and other things like that. That the more stable vehicle will actually consume less fuel.
They're both driving in the same weather conditions. They're both heading down the same exact road. They're both staying at the same speed. And when it gets to the other side, the one that is lighter that had to work less is not only going to be cooler, it's gonna have more fuel left over in it.
Wait a minute.
Let's made it more efficient.
Let's just inject two more factors. They both have the exact same aerodynamics.
Yeah.
And they both do not start counting your energy use until they are at their maximum speed.
Yep.
both travel at the same speed. There will be no energy difference. No matter which one weighs more, it could weigh 500 pounds more. It will still take the same amount of energy because of Newton's law of motion.
Yep, once a body's in motion, it tends to stay in motion. Keeping it going takes the same amount of energy.
Exactly. It makes no difference. It's like taking a feather and a penny, and you put it inside of a long glass tube and put a vacuum in it. You turn it upside down, the penny and the feather will fall at the same rate of speed because there is no resistance. Therefore, if one car weighed 5,000 pounds, the other car weighed 4,000 pounds, once they reach, and they're both identical in aerodynamics, both using the same identical tires on the road,
so
everything that's been saying, the only difference you're going to have is nothing. There will be no difference once it reaches its top speed. Now, here's where we get into the problem. The problem is, once they're dead stop and you better get them up to 55 miles an hour, the one that weighs more will take more energy.
That's what I'm talking about.
But once it's there, it uses the exact same amount of energy because it has the exact same resistance, because it has the exact same aerodynamics.
Which, if you have crosswinds that creates friction on the tires as you're being, it's trying to blow you back and forth across the road, the object that's heavier with the same aerodynamic, it's going to be a lot harder for that wind to try to push and move around, so you're actually going to get better efficiency out of it than you are out of a lighter vehicle that's getting whipped off.
That is the biggest single problem with automobiles, is your stop and go, traffic lights and stop signs, your stop and go. American Railroad Association, actually here about 3 or 4 years ago, did an update on their ad. About 15 years ago, they did an ad in a major industrial magazine that they could move 40 tons of merchandise, 40 miles of 1 gallon of diesel fuel. 2-3 years ago, they took out another ad updating that they can now move 60 tons of merchandise, 40 miles of 1 gallon of diesel fuel. Why? They have steel wheels or steel tracks. Number one, they put a whole lot of cars full of merchandise behind the locomotive. The locomotive only breaks the wind. Everything else, the energy slides down the sides of the car. If they made the cars smoother on the sides and put some kind of a windbreak between the cars, they could probably move 80 or 90 tons of merchandise 40 miles on 1 gallon of diesel fuel.
I'm saying with the standard type of equipment available on any given car right now, that because of the way that the fuel is injected, because of the type of burn that it's getting, and how much energy is actually being transferred through the drivetrain all the way down to the rear end and moving you down the road, that if you designed a car that not only weighed less, but was using that fuel in the most efficient manner, vaporizing it before it came inside there, getting a perfect burn off of there, not wasting any heat whatsoever, turn around and using some of that energy to redirect back into power sources that would keep the batteries charged up so that the alternator never had to kick on. I guarantee you, beyond a shadow of doubt, when it got to the other side, that vehicle there would have more fuel than the one in the other side. And that's taking the same exact path. Now, I know what the laws of physics say. And I know what they say can't be done. But we waste so much energy in everything that we do. And even in the way that we design our vehicles, if they can design a suit for a bicycler to be able to ride longer and faster because of the wind restrictions that you got on your average clothing, then there ain't no reason why you couldn't design an automobile to utilize that same exact effect to make it so much more aerodynamic, to give itself an edge over there. In the race car industry, even stock cars, these guys are so creative that they have figured out ways to keep an extra gallon of fuel in their doggone fuel line. You got an extra gallon of fuel, so that means you can stay out there on the track longer than the other guy. And as long as it, when you go in to weigh this vehicle, it doesn't weigh, it's not, it doesn't meet the weight restrictions on it, then it'll pass through the deal. But they got the advantage because they got an extra gallon of fuel in there. Now imagine that same engine with the extra gallon of fuel that has a carburation system or even a fuel injection system that is engineered to only put the exact amount of fuel necessary to cause the combustion portion of it. He's going to have an even better edge. And if he has a specific type of coating that he could paint the car with that would cause that thing to have the air just literally wrap around and slide right off, he could cut through the air and give himself yet even more efficiency. There's so many different ways by which you could make the doggone automobile so much more efficient that there's no way you would be using near as amount of fuel. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying that the laws of physics can be defied. What I'm saying is that you can use the laws of physics to your advantage to the extent where you can make things so doggone efficient that you barely have to use fuel.
Now you just said a mouthful. Use the laws of physics. Don't try to ignore them. Don't try to fight them. Use Mother Nature to your advantage.
Yeah, it's what I've been... So I've been trying to figure out a way to say to people forever and a day, but I just don't seem to have the right words to explain to them what it is that I'm telling, you know, because I know what the school book says. They know what the school book says. I get in feuds with electrical engineers and electricians and mechanics and all these guys because they're like, "Oh, you're crazy. That won't ever work because of this."
About all this efficiency on engines, what about efficiency on speech?
Well,
yeah, let's work on some of that.
You think I got years to go back through etiquette school and learn how proper punctuation and...
it don't take years, that's just it, man.
Well, I'm working on it.
That's the beautiful part about you.
I'm working on it. I'm trying to improve myself. The whole thing is, though, if you're going to go and try to create clean, renewable, alternative energy, then you can't overlook any little anomaly. There's so many different things out there that I've learned on this quest to search for free energy that I have seen that there are things that, you know, normally would be considered to be a nuisance, an obnoxious nuisance or whatever, such as static electricity. Nobody wants static electricity if they're working on high-tech electronics, but if you know this one process produces a lot of static electricity, and you know the voltage is pressure, you also know that you can store that static electricity and use it for a power booster and, electric car or something like that.
That brings up a bone I need to pick with you.
Yeah.
In the past three or four bad-sized shows we've had, you and a bunch of us have discussed the static electricity and this, that, and another. And up until the first program that we started talking about it really hard, it's been years since I've gotten shocked by static electricity. And since we've started talking about this in the past two or three shows, I get the heck knocked out of me four or five times. What's going on here?
Well, you need to build yourself some sort of shirt or something that'll absorb that static charge and then plug your USB phone charger into it.
That brings up another pet peeve with me, too. And that's trying to get electricity out of the air by harnessing lightning bolts. No. The lightning bolt is a discharge of the static electricity. Pulled static electricity out without an actual discharge.
Yeah, I'm not saying that this is the smart way or even the safe way for that matter. I'm saying that it is possible to literally do that. But your version is to get it before it ever even cracks, which is the safer version.
yes. You know, but the thing is, you don't want to harness all of it. Because there's enough lightning
throughout the world that if you could harness all of the lightning, all of the static electricity in the clouds and the earth in a 24-hour period, you could power the entire world for 10 years. However, if you did that, then guess what? Lightning makes ozone. Then all of a sudden you would deplete the ozone layer. So you don't really want to harness all of it. You just want to harness what you need. Only what you need. Think about that a minute.
So there's a comment in there said, Chazin's made a video and never went back to it. I'll never know. Maybe because no one wants to comprehend it. Who's asking that question?
Justin.
So what's the question, Justin?
No, it's not so much of a question. It was just more when we were talking about Nikola Tesla and his tower of transmission. If you have a DC battery bank in your car and you have either electric AC or electric DC, it doesn't matter, the car can be powered by the Tesla tower. And how that's done is done through sound, a signal. Right? The signal is all a motor needs. The amperage behind it is what makes it move. So if the battery source is in the car and you have a tower sending out an analogous wave, a signal, to the car would move on your demand.
I see what Justin's talking about.
It's two LC circuits, that's all it is. The Tesla power is an LC circuit, and in your car you have an LC circuit.
Well, what video was it you was talking about that I never went back to?
We talked about it, and then you never went back to playing with it. It was when you threw your Walkman across the room when you were playing with the Tesla
car. Oh, I'm still working on that. I just haven't done right. Any updated videos to it.
If you make an LC circuit that's coupled to a motor with a battery right there, just a normal little battery, you can send a signal to that LC circuit and the motor will turn.
You see?
And then if you want to, you can send directional beams to certain objects as well.
Here's the thing. That technology, I'm still working on the same thing, but listen. When you talk about getting energy out into the mainstream media, the mainstream world or whatever, out into the general population, the technology that I know about and the technology that I can afford to put on the market right now and the simplest way to get the first stepping stones out there is going to be by making things that are already made so much more efficient that you can work your way towards using this. Literally, you could take the equivalence of a Tesla coil, put it inside of a vacuum chamber to produce a massive plasma reaction inside there, which would generate an enormous amount of power, not only in radiant energy, but frequency waves as well, and heat-wise or whatever. You could literally design an engine that would literally run off of the energy that was coming off of that coil because of the way that you're pulsing it into that gas. And
well,
so
the same page.
We could build a modern day version car that would be so super high tech to what you're actually looking at right now. If you look at the internal combustion engine right now, there was a lot of engineering that went into that. And they're pretty high tech. But they're still in their baby slippers, so to speak, because what we have knowledge to do right now, it puts that back in the Stone Age. The modern day, the best modern day car that you've got right now, I don't care how high end or how dollar sports car you got right now, is the equivalence of a Flintstone car compared to the technology that we have at our disposal. If we wanted to properly engineer an electric car to be a self-charging, picks its energy up on the way down the road and never have to stop at a fuel station, we've got all that technology. But to get it out there so that every single one of the average Joes could afford this, That's going to take something a little bit more than what I've got by myself. I put the ideas out there one right after another, but if nobody ever picks that idea up and runs with it, then it's just an idea. You got some brilliant concepts of things that you want to work on, and I understand that, yeah, we should be so much further advanced. That's why I call it mad science, for Pete's sake, because, you know, back when I was a kid, we were talking about by the time the year 2000 gets around, we're going to be flying around in cars. Where's my Jetson car? It's 2017. You're 17 years late. If I got this information in my head and I understand that it doesn't defy any of the known laws of physics and that it's mechanically sound and that it could actually be proven, and I could get somebody, a team of citizens together, and we'd actually build this in our garage and prove the concept, I'd be the happiest camper on this planet, because I could say, look, here it is. But the case that it is right now, I don't have the capability of manufacturing some of these things. I can make little models, I can show proof of concept, but then it just turns out to be another video out there on Mad Science YouTube if nobody takes that idea and runs with it. I did a video called 9 Volts. I also did a video called Unsubscribe, where I showed people probably the most efficient way to utilize DC current and not one battery in this entire deal, but you can literally watch as this entire circuitry, 10 separate circuits that run off of 9 volts apiece, would light up and do their thing, send out radio frequencies and everything. I showed them the most efficient way to do it in one little video, how you could literally take energy and store it in a large container and then feed it down to smaller containers all the way down to your tiniest load, and they would literally shut off in sequence by the size of that capacitor alone, would tighten that thing out to where you wanted it to go. I got a lot of hate off of that. A lot of people didn't understand what it was that I just showed them. I showed them how to make a hot tub using a coffee pot element. Normally, hot tubs use about a 220-volt system that uses up a lot of energy to maintain that heat and to circulate the pumps and all that kind of stuff. I did it with the equivalence of a coffee pot. And not only was able to get this water to heat up, but I was able to sit in this thing out in the open air with snow on the ground and snow coming down, and I was all warm and toasty sitting in my swimming shorts in the dead of winter in a homemade hot tub. And you'd think that video would have people would have understood what it was, the point of that video, but if you go actually look at that video and you read the comments, some of the crazy stuff that people had said on that video, that's probably one of my most popular videos, the Redneck Hot Tub. But some of the names that I've been called because of that particular video were ridiculous. And I actually had to ban a few people off of my YouTube channel for insulting comments that they made. But if they would have understood what it was that I was actually showing them in the form of efficiency, then they would have got it. So you got an efficient way to heat water. You got an efficient way to store energy. There are so many different methods by which you can pull energy in from the atmosphere, wind, hydroelectrics, thermoelectrics, and it goes on and on. As far as Tesla's technology and being able to do things with sound waves, there isn't one single form of energy. It doesn't matter whether it's sound or whatever. There isn't one single form of energy that cannot be stored and used to do whatever it is that you need to do. Sound waves coming through the air, electromagnetic spectrum, those waves as they go through certain materials we know will rock electrons back and forth and produce friction or current flow. And so we know that we can get things done with sound. You can literally take and vibrate things apart with sound. You can literally stimulate healthy cell growth with sound. So that's like that deal where some people are really annoyed by fingers going down a chalkboard. That sound just drives people insane. But other people who are more resistant to it, it don't bother them a bit. But sound has the possibility to literally physically affect the human psyche, the human body, and it has the possibility to physically affect different types of materials. It's also you can transmit data with sound. If you go back and you look at the old computer systems, the only thing them old computers with the acoustic couplers were listening for was the screes and blees, which were turned into ones and zeros, which turned into data on the other side. That's the only thing the computer known was those sound waves that were coming in there. Scree, scree, blee, blee. You'd always hear it every time you'd fire up your doggone modem to turn on the internet. You'd hear that crazy sound in the background. Nowadays, you don't hear it because it's built into a network card, but it's still sending out the same type of pulses down the line that the other side on is reading it. And it ain't no different than Morse code, you know, tapping out the dots and dashes. The other side understands those tones. They're equated to a number, and so those numbers are equated into letters and pictures and whatever. We can transmit data using sound. So the technology that you're talking about, Justin, I'm fully on board with. We should be so much farther along than what we are right now. It's ridiculous that you can sit here with a iPhone in your hand that has all kinds of different programming on there that will do everything from mathematics to drawing to taking video and sound or whatever. You can call somebody up, you can sit there and look at them while you're talking to them, that kind of technology. You got that in your hand, yet we're sitting here talking about clean, renewable alternative energy. Supposedly, they sent a probe all the way to Pluto, so far away that if you look back at the sun, it's like a little dot in the sky, the same looking like you'd see from standing on the ground looking at the stars up there, and it's that far away. You don't have this big bright globe in the sky anymore. It's like a little tiny dot. Probably colder than all get out there because it's so far away from the sun, and so far away that in between there would be radiation and micrometeorites and all this crud. But we were able to send a probe millions of miles through space with a thermal reactor inside of it that literally produced enough electricity and energy to run all the equipment, to keep everything from freezing up, and when you got to the other side, was able to zoom in, take a picture of it, send that back as a radio signal all the way through space again, and give us a picture of the planet Pluto. Now, if science has that kind of technology, you tell me why we're standing on the ground that we're standing on right now, and we ain't seen the Jetson car yet.
Right. Amen, Brother. Amen.
So, you know, there you go, man. These folks out there with the highest technology, they got all the cool tools and stuff like that. And, you know, why the average Joe doesn't have access to the James Bond car right now is beyond me. You know, if you really cared about this planet, if it really was in danger of global warming / climate change / climate disruption or nuclear spills and all that kind of stuff, what do you got to lose by listening to a guy like me who tells you that, hey, you could take all that radioactive waste all over this planet and you can power this planet for the next 25,000 years if your science is true and what you're telling me is right, and then this stuff will be around for thousands of years. Why aren't you taking that energy that is being released by that and turning it into a different form of energy and powering up all the lights and stop burning coal and all the other stuff you're complaining about? You see what I mean? You tell me something is radioactive so much that it's gonna kill you because it's releasing so much energy that you gotta bury it in concrete in barrels under the ground for hundreds of thousands of years before it finally depletes itself back into its natural state, And yet you can't draw no energy off of it, but NASA can send it all the way to freaking Pluto and take a picture and send it back? Who's ridiculous, me or mainstream science? Look, I may not be the brightest candle in the box. I may not be the most well-spoken person out here. But I can tell you one thing's for sure. I can sure understand that when I see it, there's common sense and there's lack of common sense. You don't stick your finger in the fire 27,000 times to find out that it hurt the first time.
She says,
yeah.
Why do radioactive materials deplete?
That's a good question. You know, I have no answer to that question. Has anybody ever been able to literally study uranium to the extent that they could find out what was actually occurring there in that process?
Yeah, but I mean, if it's, I mean, if it changes
time domain.
But if it changes elements, like when it depletes, it turns into another element, right?
I'm not exactly sure.
Thomas.
Sorry, what did you say?
When a radioactive material depletes, it's turning into another element, right?
I think it depends on what direction you went with making it radioactive, whether it's got excess material or it's actually got too little and it's basically destabilizing and breaking down to turn into something else. I mean, everything is basically, nothing is actually stable. Everything is destabilized, and everything is slowly but surely turning into the next lower state of matter.
I know it's a terrible example, but if you look at sodium, basically carbonated water, and you watch the reaction that's going on with carbonated water, it's like two materials that probably shouldn't be together, but they end up, you'll watch the bubbles go up and the gas escape, and then finally the soda end up being flat. Pretty much the same doggone process. So probably in the process of actually however the earth was created and things getting mixed up together that probably shouldn't have been mixed up together for whatever reason, they're basically deteriorating the same way. And so as it deteriorates, it's actually releasing energy into the surrounding area around it. And so what that actual release of energy is, that they classify as radioactivity, it might not be a bad thing. You see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying.
But at high concentrates, it might be dangerous.
It's getting mixed up, and now it's trying to rebalance itself out again.
Yeah. And so what I'm saying is, since we know that's an energy release that literally has the capability of affecting the body physically, we know in form of heat that if something is highly radioactive, that it will send out waves that will literally heat things up. That's what the thermal deal was that they sent to Pluto. That's what.
Isn't that exactly how they made the atomic bomb? They just simply took uranium and speeded up the process.
Then they mixed a couple materials together, and they had a reaction with each other. Thermal fusion, The blue light, the blue flash. But the point is, that energy that is considered now to be waste, toxic, and is buried in barrels God knows where, if that energy was still available, and you couldn't figure out a way to put like some sort of radiant energy transfer system or a coil system that would pick up that energy, because if it's releasing electric waves, then obviously you could use that to move electrons around that would cause a reaction that would cause a current flow, so you could actually make a thermoelectric generator, shove it down in that barrel while you're putting it in the barrel to begin with, concrete it up and hang the wires out the side. Now you got doggone battery sitting down in the dirt for however long it's going to last. They said the one that went to Pluto had been out in space for 9 years. It took it 9 years to get to Pluto. And by the time it got to the other side, they said it was still producing over 200 watts of power. 9-year-old battery is pretty doggone impressive, and if that ain't proof of free energy, I want to know where the cutoff limit for free energy really is. How many years does it have to be before it can be classified as free energy? If it goes for longer than a year, is that free energy? 9 years, is that getting closer? Does it take 100 years to make it free energy? I mean, come on, man.
Well, I wouldn't call it free energy, but efficiency. Like, if you have 100% efficiency, that's pretty good.
I'm calling it free energy because the stuff came out of the dirt.
Well, everything comes out of the dirt.
That's right. It does, and the wind blows your hair all sideways and makes you look like, I don't know, some, like Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
You know? And so it didn't cost you nothing to get that new hairdo. The wind just did it. All right. And the sun, if you go stand out in the sun too long, you'll get warm. You stand out a little bit longer, you're going to get hot. And eventually, you're going to get blistered up because you're too hot. And eventually, you're going to dry out and look like some dried up frog or worm after a rainstorm. And they get caught out in the sunlight. Be all like beef jerky or something. You know? And it didn't cost you nothing, except the pain of going through the mess.
You know, that's the thing is, people that don't believe in free energy are not—they're not thinking about what they believe. The energy is free. It's the machine, the apparatus, the electronic equipment that you need to transfer energy of one pipe into another pipe that you can actually use. It's the machine that costs money, not the energy.
Of course, but once you got it, then you ain't paying the bill no more.
Exactly.
That's the whole thing. Look how much power is in the oceans. Waves come in and out. That water is probably one of the most powerful elements on this planet. I mean, water, the hydraulic pressure of water alone, the weight of water, the way that water flows so smoothly or whatever, the breakdown of water, you know, the hydrogen and the oxygen in the water. Water is probably the perfect fuel as far as anything we've got out there. There are systems that people have designed in the past that have like floats on there. It's got a little paddle that goes under the water, and as the waves are coming in, it's whipping this paddle back and forth, and it's producing electricity. Well, come on, man. It didn't cost you nothing to have those waves, and those waves aren't going to stop anytime soon. And if it's going to happen,
I was going to say those waves though are usually either caused by one of two things. It's either wind movement, which is caused by thermal differences in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Or it's caused by tidal. If it's tidal, then it's caused by gravitational pull. So the water isn't the source of power there. The water is just the transmitter of power.
Well, there you go. But nonetheless, down by the beach, it's windy. The waves are coming in and out, and it's sunny. So you got three massive power sources right along the edge of the beach.
Right, right. The thing is, you're using water as a transducer at that point. You're not using it to make energy. You're using it to transfer energy.
Well, what I said earlier in the show was that the only reason why you got copper wire in your electric motors or generators is using the copper as a conduit, a railroad track, so to speak. And so all we are doing in anything that we're talking about is literally moving one source around to the next and changing it to whatever range frequency that we want in order to get work done.
Exactly what I just said. The energy itself is free. It's the machine that you need to build to
produce that energy, not produce the energy, but to transfer it to where you need it to do what you need it to do.
Yep.
It's the machine that costs money, not the energy. The waves are there. They're collecting energy, like Thomas said, from wind, from subterranean volcanoes, from whatever. But they're collecting and storing all this energy, but man hasn't learned how to use it yet properly. So therefore, it comes up into hurricanes and tornadoes, waterspouts, storms, drowning and sinking ships, and because we haven't learned how to use it properly. It's there. The energy is there, and it is free. We just haven't learned how to use it properly.
Well, and since water could be used to not only transfer heat, and it can be used to transfer cold, it can be used to break down for a fuel source and an internal combustion engine. It can be used as a hydrogen and oxygen are separating and then reconnecting, produce a charge of electricity. There's so much energy out there in this world right now that if you used it efficiently, you might actually even help the system out by not, allowing like lightning storm to build up to the point where a lightning bolt comes down and burns somebody's house down and kills them. Your equipment would keep that one like a safe zone because it would be taking the energy out of the air in that general vicinity and utilizing it to get work done. So you gotta have a safe lightning zone.
Yes, exactly.
And I know that sounds like, I know how it sounds because I know how it was taught during the time I was going through school, science class and everything else, shop class. You know, I know all the laws of physics. I'm not trying to defy any of them. I know how everything works, so why not take that knowledge and use it? For example, I'm 150 pounds. I'm not a very strong person per se, as opposed to maybe a 200 pound muscle bound dude. But I understand that if I use a block and a big long pole for a lever, that I can lift just as much or more as that muscle bound dude with just one arm because of the leverage factor in there. So I'm using physics to my advantage where I could lift that muscle bound dude with that lever. You see what I mean?
Yes, but I've got a scenario here that I would like to say and tell me whether I'm right or wrong or not. Let's say you've got two 12-volt batteries. One of them's charged up to 14 volts. The other one's charged up to 9. Now, you hook wires between them. Now, positive is positive, negative is negative. When you first start to hook the last wire up, you get a little spark. Now, what if you went over here and you held it to where it didn't actually touch, but it arced over? You would lose a lot of energy. The transfer of the power on the greater charged battery would go to the lesser charged battery until they both equalize out. But now if you let it arc through, then you would actually lose some of that power through the light and the heat produced. But if you could slap that wire on there fast enough, they would only arc for a split second, then the battery would sit there and slowly drain until they both equal out. That's exactly what I'm talking about harnessing the power of lightning. You don't want to catch the lightning bolt. What you want to do is take the positive charged battery of the clouds and drain it slowly into a storage unit on the earth.
Sure you could. But in reality, across that spark gap, you actually got this effect called the Venturi effect that they use in a lot of different types of applications like automotive or whatever, and you can even pump water with the Venturi effect. When that lightning bolt is shooting across that spark gap, it's actually pulling energy in from the atmosphere and adding to the punch on the other side. That's one of the reasons why DC current is so powerful. It literally pulls in the energy with it on the way through. It's like a magnet, you know. Put a magnet next to anything that is magnetic, and what's the words? Diamagnetic, paramagnetic, and one other one, I think.
Ferromagnetic?
Ferromagnetic, yeah.
There's a couple more, but those are the main big ones.
Yeah, so once that magnet's in the general vicinity of, say, like metal shavings, all those metal shavings rush in to join the party, right? Well, the same thing happens with electrons and electricity, the way electricity flows. That's why Tesla figured out that if you have a knife switch and you got power behind that knife switch, when you hit that, all that energy rushes in to balance itself back out really rapidly. Well, that instant punch inside there is where you get that surge of energy that blows your light bulb out of your socket when you go in the bathroom and turn the light on too fast. I got myself into a habit of going in and slowly turning the light switch on, because if you go in there and just flip it up, you can burn the bulb out because of that sudden surge of power going through that element. So, that's it. There's more than enough energy out there to supply all the luxuries and comforts that people are accustomed to. And in this day and age, we could do this so doggone incredibly efficient that, you know, you'd have clean water in your ponds and your streams. You wouldn't be dumping trash down, you know. There's a company out there. I've never been impressed with a company more than, I think it's Waste Management that's down here in my general area. But what they learned, that they were going around, they were picking up trash for years, and the dump kept getting thicker and higher and smellier and worse and worse. And then along came this idea about recycling. They started actually hiring crews. They would come in and they would sort trash out into different materials, and they turned it into a recycling plant where they were turning around selling the trash that they just got paid to haul away from people's houses. And they got this place right now where you go by, you drive past there, and you can't even tell it's a dump. It's got beautiful landscaping. There ain't no stink rolling off of it. And it's just nice to look at. Before,
yeah, it was a quarter of a mile from my house, exactly what you just said. Beautiful landscaping and all that, and people actually pay them to take their trash.
Yeah,
they take it and turn it into gas, burn the gas to boil water to make steam, to turn the turbine, make electricity, turn around it, and sell that electricity back to the same people that pay them to take their trash.
Yeah.
Trash to energy. But this minute, you're talking about, okay, different alternative energy. One third of the state of Arizona, if it were covered with solar power plants, and actually 85% of the state of Arizona belongs to the federal government. But if you took one third of that one state and covered it with solar panels, it would produce all the electrical energy the United States needed every day. If you took one half of the state of North Dakota and put up wind turbines, you would produce all the electricity the United States needed every day.
Yep.
If you took one half of all the lightning struck over the state of Florida every 24 hours, it would light the city of New York for 10 years. Think about this. There's no such thing as free energy. You're not looking. You're swimming through it. It's there. It's everywhere. It's all free. The only thing is, we've got to build the right machines to collect it and use it properly.
Yeah. And the good thing about the whole deal is we don't even have to worry about polluting the doggone water. I know where a power company sits in Montrose, Missouri, and this power company sits right on the edge of a lake. Right during the winter time, when all the other lakes nearby are frozen, you can go over there and sit on the shore side, and you can go fishing. You can catch catfish and bass and crappie and all that kind of stuff. It is a natural park. It's a national park over there. All right. Well, what they got going on is they use the water from the lake to cool the doggone plant down, and they turn around and that water goes back into the lake, and it keeps the entire lake at the same temperature all year round. And so they're not putting any crud into the lake. They're just using the temperature of that lake to cool their plant down and transfer some of that heat back in to keep that lake from ever freezing up. So you can go there any time of year and the water temperature is the same. And it's an amazing process. And if you look at this lake, it don't look like a sewer hole. It don't look like a dump, man. They got park benches and all this.
don't know if what I'm about to say has anything to do with what we're talking about, but a pet peeve of mine is the infrastructure that we have in this country today, and the fact that there are parts of, in the same years, in the same months, we have parts of the United States that is inundated with flooding. Like, for example, the Mississippi overflows, ruins, floods, towns, cities, and kills people. People aren't driving through these floods, so we don't need to be pumping gasoline through our infrastructure we already have to these cities, but we could pump this flood water out to the Midwest where the aquifer is dropping by feet every year. The infrastructure is there. Use it.
And you want to know part of the reason why there's so much flooding going on? I challenge anyone who lives out near the country or even during the city, I challenge anyone out there to literally go down to your local creeks and walk that creek for a mile or two.
Right.
And what you're going to find out through there, and farmers have this problem all the time because they need their stuff to be irrigated and they don't want their bridges and cattle deals being washed out. They have to go down inside them creeks every so often and they have to clean them out because brush and trash that people upstream had dumped down in there create little dams down through there.
Right.
And that water will try to find its way out of that creek, which will cause more erosion, which will literally cause the ground to change the path of that creek. And so places that were normally used to getting water are no longer getting water, and places that were not used to getting water are now finding that there's more water because the way the waterways are, which would have been natural if you followed it and kept it as its natural stream, then everything would have been fine. But when you build a levee over here, that's going to change the water for somebody downstream. And so since all these levees are being built and all these different streams are being plugged up, and when you build a street and you put a culvert pipe underneath that street and the culvert pipe's only so much in diameter, only so much water can flow through there, so it's going to back up somewhere and go somewhere else. So
exactly.
A lot of the flooding is basically a symptom of a lot of the neglect of all the different waterways out there. That if people actually took the time on their own property to go down there and clean out that creek, you'd be surprised at how much less flooding would go on upstream or downstream. Because the water would be able to flow like it normally did before. See, we can move dirt around here on the earth and we can dig this up and crack the ground, like with the fracking process of busting up the shale underneath there to extract gas. But if you don't understand something as simple as hydraulic pressure, and I drain your aquifer dry because I cracked something on my side, and you lose all the hydraulic pressure underneath your house, and you got this giant sinkhole in your yard now where it wasn't before.
Right.
You see? And I can easily just tell the world, hey, it was an act of God. I don't know why there's a sinkhole in your yard. My yard's fine. My yard's sitting on a whole bunch of limestone. It didn't fall in.
About we have all this flooding in Mississippi, up and down the Mississippi River, and everybody's fighting to keep the dikes up and channel this water. We have the infrastructure. It's there. Pump the water where you need it.
That's right.
Come on, man.
And regardless of what you think about it, folks, there's money in the creek.
Yeah.
Those old tires, that's material. Old iron, people throw everything in creeks. I found stoves, cars, all kinds of junk iron, scrap iron, aluminum cans, glass bottles, tires. I mean, the garbage that ends up in your local streams is ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
And, eventually nature will basically deteriorate all that stuff and it'll work its way back into the earth. But in the meantime, you're causing a dam on your side of the property that's flooding your neighbor out.
You know, the thing is, 30% of the trash you find in creeks, rivers, and streams, people didn't actually throw it in there. They just threw it out of their car, or they threw it in their back lot. And water, rain, and so forth, get a good heavy rain, and it moves that trash downhill. Downhill
yep.
Where? Downhill to the creek. Next time the rain comes down, it washes it down for 4 inches. And 30% of all the trash you find in rivers and streams, people didn't actually put it in the rivers and streams. They just didn't think about throwing it out the car window.
Well, every so often, nature throws some stuff in there, too, because you got tree branches and stuff like that as well. And so every once in a while, you need to go down, if you want to keep that waterway going, the farmers always go down to their local creeks, and they'll clean them out so that they keep the waterway going. They can use that water for their cattle and their irrigation systems. And all the farmers that I know, they do it in such a manner that it's not going to affect the guy down the next farm over. He's still going to get the water. It's going to come down there in, matter of fact, probably better condition than it did before because he took the time to clear the trash and stuff out of it. You know, it's not going to plug up his culvert pipes and flood his cattle bridges and stuff out. So, you know, hey, if you work in harmony with nature, you take care of nature, nature will take care of you. And that's what we're talking about, man. This whole clean, renewable, alternative green energy, I'm trying to tell everybody out there, look, it didn't get this messy overnight. It took hundreds of years to get to where we're at right now. And so it's not going to be able to be cleaned up overnight. But if everybody took a little bit of knowledge away from what we're talking about here, you could start working towards efficiency and working in harmony with nature and basically give this planet some help to clean itself up. Ain't no doggone reason to build a nuclear power plant and run the risk of a hydrogen explosion in that power plant. If something goes awry, you're using modern technology, slightly modern technology, because the nuclear's been around for a while, but you're using slightly modern technology with ancient technology, and if anything goes wrong in that, then a seal bust or whatever, somebody gets some hot radioactive steam to the face, and that's probably not going to be their best day that they've ever had. In reality, you could have used certain types of materials properly engineered that would withstand not only the heat and the pressure of that, but reduce the chances of danger. So, but if you're building these things, you're building them on fault lines or whatever, and you later on down the line have a problem, then you got an issue. But even that same doggone issue could be resolved with some knowledge about how to transfer energy. Instead of allowing that energy to transfer into the ocean and turn jellyfish into mush, you steer that away into a facility that you can store that energy, use that energy, take it away until that water finally cools itself back down and makes it to where it's back to its natural state again. Any energy out there will balance itself out to back to what nature had it to begin with. So if you want to help nature out, you just speed that process up by using some of that energy to get work done while it's trying to cool itself back down. And in the process of taking away some of that heat, you're helping to assist cool it down. You see what I mean? Heck, they boil water with highly refined radioactive material. Right? When the radioactive material is no longer boiling the water to the efficiency level that they need it in, it's now classified as waste. That waste is still releasing energy because according to their words, is that it's going to be releasing energy for the next 1,000 years. It's not safe. And even if it's only 100 years or 10 years, there's 10 years worth of energy that's just sitting there not being used.
What?
It only took 9 years to get to Pluto to take a picture. See what I mean?
Yeah. If you took what they use on that satellite that collects that small, small, minuscule amount of radiation traveling through space to power that satellite, how much power could they get out of wasted nuclear fuel?
That's right.
If they use the same technology.
same technology down in the same barrel that they threw down into the same concrete that buried underground, and basically have a electrical wire coming up out of there. And if you're worried about the radiation transmitting through the electrical wire, then do it wirelessly. Build a Tesla coil under the ground inside the same can to send that energy wirelessly through the air.
There you go.
It's, man, I know sometimes I may sound like a total flat-out nutcase, but if you sit down and actually listen to what it is I've been pointing out all this time, it's not going against your rules, folks. It's not going against the laws of physics.
It's almost like it's so simple, people can't see it.
Yeah, somebody said something similar to that.
You've got an item that you want to hide. Where is the best place to hide anything? Right out in the open. Because anybody that knows you're going to hide something, they're going to look in unusual spots. They're not going to look like in front of their face.
People fear anything that has the label radioactive on it. Alright? Well, you got radioactive material in your house. If you got a smoke detector or a carbon monoxide detector, there's a little piece of americium up in there, which is radioactive material, that anytime any smoke or anything gets in between there, it changes the voltage in the circuit, which turns on an alarm system and tells you that you might want to check and make sure your house ain't fire and get out. So they're utilizing radioactive material to literally use it for a safety purpose to get things done. So there you go, man. Stephen Gibbs posted in here, yeah, you pay the waste company to take your waste, then they use the waste to create electricity, then sell it back to you at full price. If you can't see the unfairness and one-way benefit in that, you simply ain't looking. Thanks, Stephen. That's exactly what we've been trying to say. And, you know, it's like this. Why couldn't we, as the Dream Team, design a compactor system that would not only separate all the differences of materials, plastics, glass, you know, crush them up, grind them, separate them into separate little tanks, and turn that doggone material into usable products again. Build a molding system where you can take your plastic trash and build little bricks that you can build little fancy walls around your house or something like that. You know, some sort of
utensil.
Even make a frisbee factory for that matter. Everybody have fun throwing frisbees around made out of trash. See what I mean?
Ooh, man, I don't like that.
I mean, there's so many things that can be made out of plastic, it's ridiculous. So, heck, half your cars these days.
That's something I was pointing out to somebody that posted one of those little memes where they were talking about getting off of disposable plastics. And I said, you know, it's not... what if something is recyclable, how is it disposable? To me, disposable means basically it can't be reused.
Well, I got everybody saving bottle caps. Plastic bottle caps.
So we grind it up and turn it into filament and print more stuff out. When they get done with that, throw it back in the grinder, turn it into more filament, 3D print something else out of it.
Yep.
Plastic is just about one of the most recyclable things on the planet. Yep.
I got people saving plastic bottle caps off of water bottles and soda bottles and stuff like that, because if you look, it's already, if you want blue plastic, you take a bunch of blue bottle caps, run it through there, and now you got blue filament. If you want white or clear, you got access to all of it. And so I got people saving these bottle caps so that we can build a little grinder that will grind the stuff up back down to pellets or dust that will be able to melt it easy and turn it into filament.
Actually, Thomas, I've been working on the process where we fix styrofoam.
Yeah.
One of the biggest single problems with plastic today is styrofoam packing. And the thing is, I'm starting working on a process where we're not even talking 3D printing here. We're talking plastic injection molding. You can melt the stuff down to a liquid, put it under pressure,
not air, but like argon or carbon dioxide gas, put it under pressure and actually inject it into a mold. And once it's been melted down and molded, it comes out it almost as clear as glass itself. And very hard.
Yeah. So,
I mean, the plastic is truly one of the most reusable, recyclable things on this earth, man-made.
Yep. So,
is there a plastic that is not recyclable?
It depends on what you consider recycling. So, you know, if you say any measure of recycling is available, then no. If you say that it has to be meltable in normal atmosphere, then yeah, there's plenty of plastics you can't melt in normal atmosphere because they thermally decompose. But if you add thermal decomposition to the recycling process to make something else out of it, then yeah, there's nothing basically you can't plastic you can't recycle.
There you go, folks. You heard it from the man himself. The man with more knowledge of chemistry than I've ever known in my life. Personally, and he just said it. All plastics are recyclable in one way or another, but they're recyclable and they're man-made. Duh! Why are we throwing them in our landfills? Why?
Well, folks, are you guys ready for a coffee break?
Yes, sir.
Alright, so we're going to take a quick music break and then come back and polish off the last portion of the show. And so with that said, you're listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned, everybody.
Can you hear me? Give me creation!
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
All right, and we're back. So you're listening to the Mad Science Show at www.shazazradio.com. Testing! Yeah, it's still working. So anyway, basically, folks, we've sat here and explained all kinds of different projects we're going to be working on and things we want to work on and differences in efficiency of materials, and it's just never ending out there. You know, folks, if you really want to basically make this world a better place, there's a whole lot different methods by which you can do things. You know, I found out during the alternative energy research and search for free energy that I'd butt heads with people all the time, because I'd start talking about some Tesla technology and somebody would bring up, "Ah, what about Bagini stuff? And this is better because of this or that or whatever," you know. And I went through all this for God knows how many years, back and forth, listening to all these different alternative energy designs out there. You know, the PAP engine and plasma. And then there was that whole Keshi debacle that drove me insane, because I was sitting there like listening to this guy telling everybody you pretty much got to love your reactor. If you're a jerk, you're not getting free energy. And it was ridiculousness, and so it was a waste of time. But, you know, he had a huge following. He milked them for a lot of money and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, It didn't get nowhere. Supposedly he released free energy at least almost a year ago, and you know, the world isn't any different right now. So, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm contemplating on all these different devices, all the different anomalies, everything that I learned from Tesla and all the different, even Bedini and, you know, even Keshi for that matter. So some of the ridiculousness that he did, I could explain to you how his stupid reactor actually works, but nonetheless, he's telling everybody you gotta love your reactor and it's got healing qualities and all this kind of stuff, trying to be a snake oil salesman and getting himself in trouble because he's gotta keep on skipping out on the bill. You know, sort of like a dine and dash kind of deal. You know, at everybody else's expense. Nonetheless, I keep on, watching all these different things that's going on. I'm seeing things about nano-coating wire and all this, and I see that even in that fraudulent design of his, that there are still chemistry things going on in there that you could learn a lot of stuff from. Ways to transfer energy, such as what Robert Murray Smith does with graphene technology, and now he's working with hemp technology, which is pretty impressive. And so, all of these things in together with each other, you step back and you look at all these pieces that you got laid out on the table, and now you start to see a different picture. You know, if I move this one here over next to that one, I will get this reaction to work with that reaction, and this is the result I'll get on that side. It's kind of like if you sit there and draw yourself out a little cog or a gear, and you draw a little arrow that this one is turning this way, and then you look at the next gear line that you draw, and you say if these two gears are connected, and this one's turning right, then that one, because of the way that this is designed, that one will be turning left, and the next one will be turning right again. And so you can understand the mechanics of what's going on there. This is what I do with alternative energy ideas. I do everything from static electricity to plasma technology, and so on, the hydrogen technology, whatever. It's as I look at it in a way that you're putting this gear with that gear in order to get this result, you know, and you're not in the process not defying any of the known laws of physics. Raymond did a deal where he called it this two-stage oscillator. I think that was the name of it. Was that it, Raymond? And that was using leverage to...
Yeah, that
was using leverage to, when he got this thing going, all he had to do is just basically reach out every once in a while and touch this thing, and at the other end of that was raising up a lot of weight. Now, that told me that if you could hook a little electrical solenoid to the end of that deal, you could have that being an electronic finger that would be raising that amount of weight for you on the other side. And what could you do with that kind of amount of weight? Well, maybe you want to make some sort of press. You put a, you know, aluminum can underneath the thing and it smashes it. And then the next, it goes up again. You throw the next aluminum can into there, it's smashing it. You just made an automated can smasher. That's the way I look at stuff. And that isn't even...
That I actually produced 140 watts of electricity just using my thumbs. And the whole time I was drinking a cup of coffee and smoking a cigarette.
Yep.
And I've operated this machine for 2 hours and 40 plus minutes. Never broke a sweat, and it was in the summertime.
Well,
never broke a sweat.
If they could get, if they could see that video, and if they could get a grasp on what it is that you're actually seeing and what we're actually saying here today, you got such efficiency out of that that you could sit there and enjoy your cup of coffee in your rocking chair while you're sitting there pushing out with your finger. You know, you're not even really expending much energy. It's not wearing you out. You're not losing your breath over the deal, but you're actually getting some work done. You couldn't sit there and lift 60, 80 pounds with your finger all day long by yourself with just that, but using physics and the leverage and all that. I mean, you just turned what would have been a hard job into a breeze with no problem. But that's just one little piece of the puzzle that added in with all this other stuff. We got ways in which we can turn gear ratios into massive amount of torque. I got a little screwdriver that runs off of 6 volts, and this screwdriver will literally drive a screw into a 2x4. You know, big old 2-inch screw, it'll drive it into a doggone 2x4. And it's running off of 6 volts, but because of the engineering and the gear ratios on there, they were able to develop the torque using the laws of physics. And so, hydraulic pressure, all this stuff. Think about what you could do, not just what's going on right now, but if you look at all these pieces separately, you know, you look inside your toolbox, you got all different sizes of wrenches, you know, this one will work for that, and that one will work for that, and so on. And maybe this one won't work for that, but maybe I can use the end of this to use it for leverage to turn the other one. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I
do. I mean, who hasn't put a wrench on the end of another wrench in order to get a little bit more leverage in order to turn a bolt loose?
Exactly. Simplicity. Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to point out that if I can sit here and I can look at the way an internal combustion engine works, and I can understand that if I did a few different things on that thing, I can make it more efficient, and then that efficiency is going to cut down on the so-called carbon emissions, then that would make the environmentalists happy, right? No more global cooling or warming or whatever it is going to be next week. So, you know, if you're interested in green, clean, renewable, alternative energy, if you're really seriously interested, you need to find these researchers out here like myself and Thomas and Jermaine and Justin and all the other folks that come on the Mad Science Show, and you need to support them any way possible, even if it's just passing them information or links. And the company that I mentioned earlier, Monarch Glass, I'm going to try to do my best to support them. I'm going to try to see if I can rake up the funds in order to get them a wet sander so that that makes their business better, so that they stay in business longer, so that any future ideas that I want to try to have developed that require their skill set, then they'll still be in business, and, you know, I help them out, and maybe they'll help me out down the line. You see what I mean? That's what it's all about. That's what the dream team is all about. We have every single answer necessary to literally solve the world's energy crisis slash whatever. You know, we don't have an energy crisis. I'm only saying we'll solve it because they say that there's a problem out there. I don't believe in global warming slash climate change due to man-made emissions. But if that's what they say the problem is, and you give them the result, if they don't take the solution and use it, then they ain't got nothing else to holler about. You see what I mean? Look, don't tell me you want to save the trees while you're holding up a wooden stick and a paper sign. Boo. Man. You think I call it mad science for nothing?
Really?
Yeah, save the trees, man. Okay, just at least tell me that while you're holding that wooden stick and paper sign, that is recycled, right? Like, pick that stick up off the ground and made your own paper and such? Sometimes.
Doug, I'll tell them, hey, you need to save the planet, you save the trees, you need to go save your mama.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so, you know, the protesters out there who are supposedly environmentalists and, you know, want a social justice and all that, well, come on, man, you go out there and start a fight with men with guns and governments with, you know, power-hungry hearts and such, well, you gotta expect what you get. And if you start the fire and tear up your own communities, you ain't got no job no more, and there's smoke and soot running around, and everybody's got a case of bomber's lung, and the doggone can't breathe, and all the pollution you just created, now wouldn't it have been a whole lot better to help your communities and show them how to do it right and then work your way up that way as opposed to going out there starting a ruckus? I'm just saying. The doggone trash company's making money off of you hand over fist because they realize that you're sending them gold. And in some cases, you really are, because there are trash men out there that basically they dig through your trash to find out all the cool electronics and stuff you're throwing away. And if you accidentally lost your wedding ring in there, one of them trash men going to find it during that recycle deal. What do you think? Anybody?
You know, you said a lot of very intelligent things on this program many times. You just said one of them a minute ago, but you only said half of it. You said we don't have an energy crisis. But what you really said years ago, many times, we don't have an energy crisis. We have a common sense crisis.
That's right.
We're not the knowledge we have and using it properly.
Well, we're down to the wire. It's like 4 minutes left in the show. We are literally out here trying to show you as much energy and ideas as possible with everything that we got. We could use some assistance out there if you want to jump in there and help out if you believe in the dream. You know, we're starting in the year 2017. Sit back and contemplate on that from the beginning of the industrial age all the way up to 2017. Look at a lot how long it took to get the light bulb on the market, and then look how far we are now to where we have LEDs and fluorescent bulbs and other things like that, nifty gizmos, plasma TVs, and so on. And tell me why it is we're not so much farther along than what we are. We should be so much farther along than what we are right now. That's pretty nice drawing on there. Who's responsible for this Wimshurst with the combustion engine and the hydrogen there going on? Who did that? Is that yours, Jermaine?
Yeah.
That is very cool. I love it. I'm going to post it on the site if you don't mind. All right, everybody, Jermaine posted a really cool drawing. It's a brilliant idea, and this is what we need. We need more ideas like this. It's the ideas to get them out there. And people, when you see an idea and somebody's offering it to you for free and it's a good idea, run with that idea. Expand on that idea. You know, the first person that decided to live in a cave, you know, probably had a pretty decent idea. But then somebody else said, well, you know, there's sure ain't very much sunlight in this cave. And somebody decided, well, let's take this material and let's make this glass and we'll put a window in the cave. And it kept on until throughout the history of time, finally we're living in these really nice looking houses with all kinds of exotic materials and cool technology. And the ideas just kept on coming, and some folks figured out a way to make money off of it. And then some folks made it, figured out that if you have too many good ideas, that somebody else is going to be able to make money, and then you're not going to be as powerful because you don't have more money than somebody else. Everybody got money. And if everybody's got money, who in the heck needs money? What do you think? Anyway. Wait. Any last thoughts, guys?
Trade. Skill for skill.
That's right. Trade, barter, teach.
You got a hunter that can hunt. You know how to build things. So if he goes out and hunts, he doesn't kill animals. He brings them home alive. So you don't have to worry about refrigeration. If he needs a pen built, well, while he's out hunting, you go build a pen for him and you. Now he comes back with two animals. He gives you one for building his pen. And he's got one, and you got one, and both of you got pens.
And learn a little bit about basic science and come up with your own ideas. You'd be surprised what can happen. You'd be surprised how creative you are when you actually put your mind to it. So what about you, Thomas? Got anything you want to throw out there?
No, you guys got it.
Alright, Jermaine? No? Yeah? Huh.
I'd like to see a lot more young people like Jermaine.
Yeah, me too.
In the Bad Science program. I know they're out there. They are out there.
Yep. What about you, Justin? You got anything? Alright, I guess that's it, everybody. So, you've been listening to Mad Science. Go over there and click on that link and go say hi. Send an email over to Monarch Glass Studios and tell them OSHA Ziz sent you over. Told them about their really good creative and artistic work and really nice people. Me and my friend Larry hung out with them for a little bit watching them make something. It was amazing.
Go to Google and type in Monarch Glass Studio. When you type in Monarch Glass, and underneath you'll find several different things that says Monarch Glass this, Monarch Glass that, and one will say Monarch Glass Studio.
Yep.
Please check them out. They have a beautiful website. They're great people. They're unbelievable. They even have classes. They'll teach you how to do this stuff.
Yep.
And some of the stuff they do is mind-blowing as far as beauty and artwork. It's really is. Please, folks, check them out.
And because I want them to thrive, I'm going to actually try to put something together to try to get the funds so that I can actually help them get this wet belt sander that they need for their business. And I'm going to do that for every business out there that tries to pitch in and tries to help out, you know, each other and make things better. And, you know, just like this drawing that Jermaine put together. It's a nice drawing. He did a really awesome job on it. And the concepts are sound, scientific, and I'll tell you what, folks, this is the way we're going to get it done. We the people. You've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.